This is an interview with Charles Allen Williams at his residence in Paducah, Kentucky, and the interviewer is Betsy Brinson. Mr. Williams, would you just, I need to get a voice level here, give me your full name, please.
Charles Allen Williams.
Okay.
I don't think you'll have any trouble.
Well, thank you, Mr. Williams, for meeting with me today. Let's begin, please, with a little information about you. Could you tell me where and when you were born, please?
Yes, I was born in Obion County, Tennessee, in 1915.
Okay. And so that makes you
84 years old.
Okay. And could you tell me a little bit about your growing up? Who was in your family, for example?
Well, my father and mother, and I had a younger sister that was 4 years younger than me, and later on one that was 17 years younger. But then I grew up on a farm, 54 acres, and my father was a farmer, and he did other work at town as the bookkeeper for the tobacco auction house.
Okay. And did you do all your early schooling there in that community?
Yes, in South Fulton. I graduated from South Fulton High School. Let's see, that would have been 1933, I believe.
Okay, during the Depression.
Mm-hmm, right in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Okay, approximately how many people were in your graduating class?
There were about 20.
Okay. And I'm assuming that all of these were white children?
Yes.
Okay. Was there a black school in town, in your area, that you were aware of?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Okay. When you finished high school, Mr. Williams, what did you do next?
I didn't have the money to go to college, so I went to work after a short interval for Swift and Company in their poultry department, feeding and cleaning up after chickens at 17 and a half cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Roosevelt went in office, and when I've forgotten what the program was, but the pay went up to 32 and a half cents an hour. I thought I was rich.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that...
And was that job in the town that you grew up in?
That was in South Fulton, Tennessee.
Okay.
And the town, well, I wasn't... See, I didn't grow up in the town. It was about 2 miles from town where we lived on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next fall, worked through that year, and the next school year I went to University of Tennessee at Martin, and then while I was there I had a lady who was a cousin who had a business college, and I learned to type and take shorthand from her. And then, let's see, I finished 2 years at the University of Tennessee at Martin. And then entered Venable Law School. At that time, only 2 years of academic college was required for law school.
Had that always been the case, or was it because of the Depression? And
I think it was always the case up until that time, and a few years after that, that it was raised to 4 years, okay. Academic school before law school. Anyway, I went to Vanderbilt, and I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I managed to do it. I had a full-time law course, and I had two jobs. But I got through law school.
What were your two jobs?
What
were your two jobs?
Well, one was I was secretary to the head of the Romance Language Department, and I typed Greek and German and a lot of different foreign languages, and didn't know, of course, what I was typing, so my typing speed gained a lot. And I was able to increase typing speed to 125 words a minute, which was real good.
So that earlier education in typing and shorthand,
it put me through law school. The other job was the same type, and put me through law school. And then I first got a Tennessee law license and practiced law 1 year in South Fulton. And after that year, I was in court one day, and a lawyer from Union City that I knew called me and warned me to join the National Guard. He was commander, he was a captain commanding a company in the National Guard that was being activated by the United States. And I decided, I was single, no trappings, so I decided that I was an excellent candidate for the draft. They hadn't started the draft, but it was in the process, and I knew it was going to be enacted. And anyway, I knew that I was going to be drafted, so I decided I'd go ahead and get it over with. At that time, you could go in for 1 year and be out, and I could get it over with and go back to practicing law. So anyhow, I went in with him. And during that period of time, that year, I went from a private. When I went in, I knew absolutely nothing about the Army. I didn't know a private from a general. I couldn't have told it. And anyway, wound up being a pretty good soldier because I went from private to lieutenant, second lieutenant that year. And then, after that, when I went in the National Guard, the company, it was activated and sent to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, out of Columbia, South Carolina. I was there 2 years at Fort Jackson, and while at Fort Jackson, I was promoted to went from private to technician and second lieutenant. Then, at the end of I went in everything happened in September. I went in September 40, 19, no, let's see. September. Anyway, I went in September, went in the Army, and we went to Fort Jackson that September, and was there 2 years, and that the next after 2 years in September, went overseas to Southwest Pacific with the 30th Division. While overseas, the 30th Division was in the Buna, what they call the Buna Gona campaign in New Guinea. And was in, was overseas in 2 years. And during that time, I went from second lieutenant to captain. In the climate in New Guinea was such that we had a lot of what they call fever of undetermined origin, and I contracted it, and the doctors thought, well, they didn't think I was going to live, but I did, and then, but anyway, I was discharged from the Army. And came back, and I decided I didn't want to go back to practicing law in Fulton. And I had a cousin in Paducah called me and warned me to come up and meet a lawyer in Paducah, Virginia. I did, and talked to the lawyer, and decided to go to work for him, and I did.
Who was that lawyer?
Tom Waller.
Can you spell his last name?
W-A-L-L-E-R, Waller. He was quite a raconteur and an excellent trial lawyer. I learned a lot about trial practice under him. Practiced with him for 1 year and then decided to get out on my own. I went to practicing on my own. And practiced on my own then. Well, I had several partners and associates and so forth through the years. And in the, I had a, in fact, after law school, I did some more studying and got a, what they call a Juris Doctor's degree, the same as a PhD, Doctor of Philosophy. Anyway, then I practiced with various other lawyers and had my own firm. Retired, I guess, 4 years ago.
Okay. How did you begin to get interested in public office?
Well, I think every young lawyer is interested in, or should be. While I was practicing on my own, when I left Mr. Waller, I left him, that would have been, and started with him in 45, and that would have been 46 as I started on my own. And then the latter part of 46, I guess it was, I'm not real sure about these exact years now, but while I was in that 46, latter part of 46, I had become acquainted with some of the commissioners, city commissioners, and they'd had a new election, and the city commissioners were upset with the city manager, and they had hired a replacement, a new city manager. Well, shortly, they told the incumbent city manager that he was going to be replaced, one, not one of the meeting nights, but meaning to replace him when the new commissioner would get loose from his assignment. And it'd be several months. Well, the city manager just walked out, got his hat, and quit that night. And that left him without a city manager. And I'd become acquainted with several of the, and helped with the election of some of the commissioners. And they called me and wanted me to become acting city manager. And I did. And after...
That would have been about when?
That would have been in the, let's see, that would have been, that would have been about 47.
Okay.
The middle, latter part of 47. So, anyway, I was handling the job, apparently, satisfactorily. As city manager, and my military experience had been good for that, and not a captain in the Army without having some executive experience, ability. Anyway, they, at that, during that time, the city manager that the mayor and commissioners had hired decided he wasn't going to come to Paducah. He didn't come. So they were left without a new city manager. So they hired me. And I was then city manager for, I believe it's 15 months before I got sick of it. Decided I didn't want to be city manager anymore. I wanted to go. I told my wife at that time, I said, we're going to make up our minds whether we're going to be city managers or lawyers. We're going to be lawyers, or I'm going to quit this city manager job. We're going to be city managers. I'm going on. Because I'd been offered. They just adopted the city manager form of government in Parrish or Clarksville, Tennessee. I've forgotten which one. But they offered me, they came up and interviewed me, their commission did, and they offered me to be city manager of that, one of those towns, at $15,000 a year. In Kentucky, at the time I was city manager, the highest salary that any official other than the governor of Kentucky was $15,000 a year. Oh, it was $5,000 a year, I'm sorry. And $5,000 a year was what I'm making. So they were going, so we talked about it and decided if we were going to continue as city manager, we were going to take the job in Tennessee. But we decided that we'd go back to practicing law because it's more. You have many clients and don't have, they all don't quit you at once. So.
Now let me back you up a minute. Tell me how you met your wife.
Gosh, I don't remember that.
Or was when you met her, or?
That would have been, we married in, I guess in, let's see, when was went in.
When you came back from the service?
Well, no, it was a little before that. I married her about, well, a little before I went into service.
Tell me her name, please.
Her name was Hazel Pruitt. Pruitt.
Okay.
And we I had a daughter born let's see, 15 months after I was overseas. And I saw her when she was 15 months old. But anyway.
And did you have any other children?
No, one child. And her name is Gay Williams. She has a PhD now and is a clinical psychologist on Orcas Island off the coast of Seattle, Washington.
What's the name of the island?
Orcas, O-R-C-A-S. Anyway, she practices as clinical psychologist.
So you and your wife made the decision that you were going to practice law
right.
and not be a city manager.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then did you open up a practice by yourself?
I went back to practicing law by myself in Paducah. And was fairly successful.
What kind of law did you practice?
Well, it started out any kind. I was, you know, lawyer, I didn't have a client. I took anybody who came to the door. But the first, I hadn't practiced long until I decided I didn't want to practice criminal law. I didn't want to be involved with crime. Primarily because I was disenchanted with the individuals that were accused of crime. Most of them, I couldn't rely on what they said. And I just decided I didn't want to practice criminal law and quit practicing criminal law. Then, I don't remember exactly when, I also found that handling divorce law was the most unsatisfactory type of practice, but it didn't make any difference whether you're representing the man or the woman, and regardless of the outcome of the case, the client was mad at you, and you had no satisfied counsel. You could quit that. Then I represented people in automobile accidents. A little bit of corporate law. I didn't particularly like corporate law, but I did like trial practice, and I represented some insurance companies, defended them. But primarily, I became associated with American Trial Lawyers and was president, later on was president of the Kentucky Trial Lawyers Association. And then became, well, I was a member of the International Academy of Trial Lawyers and then the International Society of Barristers, too.
And at what point did you think about becoming the city commissioner?
Oh, I didn't think about it. I never was a city commissioner. I was city manager.
Right.
Know the difference.
Right. But
there's a mayor and four commissioners.
Right. Right.
And they're the legislative body of the city. The mayor's the executive
right.
officer. And but the city manager's an executive officer too.
Well, then I have some misinformation. I thought you had also been on the city commission at some point.
No, I was not. I was not on the city commission.
Okay.
I was the city manager. I had helped some of the city commissioners get me elected.
Okay. Well, that's good background. Now I want to ask you some questions about race relations.
Mm-hmm.
At what point in your growing up were you aware that this was a segregated society for blacks and whites?
Well, I guess the time I knew anything, I knew it was a segregated society. Now, so far as my family was concerned, We had a tenant house that helped out on the farm, a man and woman who were black, and we loved them as a member of the family. I mean, I don't think we treated them as blacks like many people did. We were very much very fond of them, but they were different people. I mean, treated differently. We didn't go to church together. We didn't go to school together. They weren't in schools. There was a black school in Fulton or South Fulton. South Fulton, I believe, and one in Fulton.
And so, of course, for you, during the time you were at Vanderbilt, that would have been a segregated school as well.
I don't know that it was segregated in the sense that a black couldn't have gone to law school at Vanderbilt. I suspect he could.
Okay.
They just didn't.
They weren't
qualified, right. I guess.
Vanderbilt is a private school.
Yeah, Vanderbilt Center,
Public schools, many of them had laws specifically that prohibited blacks.
That may have been so. I don't know.
You're right.
I
don't
know what they were.
Private schools.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that you moved to Paducah, do you have any sense of what race relations were like in the community?
So I didn't have any idea that it was any different from what they were in Fulton.
Okay. Did you have any reason to come in contact with any members of the black community? Like, did you have a barber who might have been black, or a shoeshine boy?
Maybe. Well, I just told you about the couple that lived on the farm.
Right. But this, I'm talking now about when you came to Paducah.
Oh, when I came to Paducah.
We were talking about when you came to Paducah.
Right. I don't remember. It wasn't enough of a thing for me to etch anything on my memory. I may have had a shoeshine man, or I may have been a barber, or may have been... I think I never did treat anybody as bad simply because they were blind. I never thought about that.
Did you and your wife ever employ black domestic workers?
Excuse me.
Did you and your wife ever employ any blacks as domestic workers?
I'm sure we did.
Mm-hmm. Or yard workers? Mm. Or
yeah.
And do you have any recollection of any of them in any way? Or?
Mm. Yeah. Not really. I know we did have some. At that time, they're much easier to employ than they are now. For household work. They, in any event, when let's see, my first wife and I were divorced, and then in 63, I remarried a woman from Mayfield, our present wife.
Do you have any children from this marriage?
No children. She had two by previous marriage. Okay. I had the one by previous.
Your daughter, did she go to public school in this community?
Yes.
She did? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you?
She graduated from Tillman High School.
Tillman, okay. Mm-hmm. Do you remember, I'm sure you do, as a lawyer, when the 1954 Brown decision came down to integrate the school system? Mm-hmm. Would your daughter probably would have been in school at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any recollection of what the community opinion was about all that? What happened here in Paducah, the school integration?
Well, I think many of the white people were not for it. One of the problems, and I don't know whether, I suppose it was from the fact that the early days of slavery, the blacks had not been given the opportunity to educate themselves and so forth. But one of the problems was, at the time I was practicing law later on, that there wasn't any blacks qualified to be lawyers or things of that kind. Some of them taught school to black children, and my guess is were better teachers than some of the white teachers, because the blacks, I've always felt, had an empathy that we white people do not have toward each other and, well, toward white people. They're easier to love and they reciprocate, I think, better than we do sometimes.
Do you remember, were there any problems in integrating the schools here?
No, they weren't. We had peaceful. No Selma problems, right. Or anything of that kind.
Or you didn't have Sturgis up the road.
Right.
Which I believe it was the Paducah National Guard that got called out to go to
probably.
Sturgis.
Well, I wasn't in the National Guard, so that was no problem for me. I remember some of the people went to Selma when they had the problem down there.
They went down to March in the...
Some of the people from Paducah did.
Right.
And I know that I was asked to go, but I've forgotten there was some reason I couldn't or didn't want to or something. I'm not sure which.
The president of the NAACP at that point was a man named Mr. Curly Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I think he went down. Did you ever have any contact with him that you remember?
No, I remember that he was, I remember he was in the forefront of trying to improve the situation so far as blacks were concerned. I don't remember having any contact with him personally or professionally.
I wonder, do you have any idea how big the black population was here back in the 50s and the 60s? Sort of like, was it close to 20% of the population? Was it smaller than that?
I would say at least 20%, or maybe a little more.
Okay. How were juries made up in those days?
Well, early on when I started practicing, they were all white.
Okay.
And that hasn't... I don't know. You could probably get better records from that at Frankfort about when. I don't know what Kentucky law said they couldn't be on juries. They just weren't. And that They weren't on juries until, I guess, maybe 10 years ago. Maybe it may have been longer than that, but I don't recall it.
How about...
I know most of the time when I was practicing representing people who'd been hurt in automobile accidents or things of that kind, and if I had a black client who'd been hurt, I was hoping that there'd be black people on the jury, but there weren't. Most of the time when I was practicing, I don't remember ever selecting a jury from a partially black family.
Has the black leadership never protested that in any way? I would think that they would want
to. I don't recall that they have, but anyway, they are now. Nothing said about it. I mean, it's taken as a matter of course. Okay. And I'm sure sometimes the percentage-wise, there's a higher percentage on juries than there are just percentage of blacks. I don't think there's any effort to exclude.
I want to ask you about the names of some people and see if you just know them and what you can tell me about them. There was a Timothy Taylor here in Paducah who in 1962-63 was appointed by the governor to the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights. Mm-hmm. I have no other information about him. But
Tim Taylor was, I believe, a minister.
Okay.
Pardon me? I don't know.
Oh,
you don't know?
No.
I believe he was a minister.
Is he still living?
That I don't know.
Okay.
If he is, he's making no ripples or anything of that kind, hasn't in a number of years.
And he was a white minister?
Yes.
Do you know what denomination he was?
Maybe Episcopalian, maybe.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that's right, but I think so.
There's a gentleman here by the name of Reverend Wardell Harvey Sr.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Harvey. Mm-hmm. Reverend Harvey's real active now.
Harvey?
H-A-R-V-E-Y.
Okay.
Active now politically. He's, I guess, one of the leaders of the black community.
Okay.
If not the leader.
Now, were you appointed by the governor to the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights?
I believe so.
I was
on it for a while.
From 1960 to 1962.
Maybe that's right. Your records are better than mine.
Do you remember any meetings or going to Frankfurt for any meetings of that group? Or?
I have a vague recollection of going to Frankfurt for some meetings. Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember what any of the issues were that you were working on during that time with the commission?
I'm afraid I don't. I don't.
Did you go out into the community as part of their team that handled complaints, discrimination complaints and all?
I don't believe it was ever called on.
Okay. At that point, the chair of the State Commission on Human Rights was a gentleman named Reverend Robert Estill. E-S-T-I-L-L, and he was an Episcopal priest from Lexington. Mm-hmm. Does that name mean anything to you?
I'm afraid not.
Okay. And then the executive director of the State Commission on Human Rights then was a gentleman named Galen Martin.
Mm-hmm. I have a vague
I recognize that name, and I've forgotten. I'd have to do some thinking to think about what he.
He eventually went to law school part-time and worked this job.
Right.
He actually stayed as the executive director for many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
There was a woman on the commission from Louisville named Fanny Rosenbaum. From the Jewish community. Does that name mean anything to you?
I recognize the name. I couldn't tell you anything that she did. I know, I remember she was active with race problems.
Okay. Now, I believe you were in the state legislature mm-hmm. in 1958, is that correct?
Right.
Can you tell me about that?
Well, my main memory about that is I ran on a ticket to anti-Governor Chandler, Albert Chandler, and was elected. I mean, our county didn't think much of Mr. Chandler. And when I got to the legislature.
And you ran on the Democratic ticket?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
In Paducah, in McCracken County, you don't get anywhere in politics if you're not a Democrat. But, I mean, you don't have a chance to vote for a sheriff or county offices. Tax assessor or anything if you're not a Democrat, because whoever's a Democrat's elected. So you've got to be registered a Democrat to be able to vote for those offices in our area. And it's largely still that way. There's still a growing number of Republicans, and one day I guess they'll. I don't think much of the. Having to register as a Democrat or Republican, I don't think much of that idea. I think that's taboo. I think if you want to vote, you ought to be able to vote, regardless, in any election.
Right. How long did you serve in, you were in the House or the Senate?
House of Representatives. Just one term.
One term. Mm-hmm. 2 years?
Just 2 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you run again, or did you?
Well, yes, I believe it did. I believe it got beat.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you would have gotten beat in about 1960, which was about the time that the governor appointed you to the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights.
Right. May have been.
And that governor was Governor Combs.
Right.
Right.
Right. I had done some work for Combs.
What?
And that was probably the reason why I was appointed.
What kind of work?
Oh, just
law work.
No, campaign work.
Campaign work. Okay.
And he was the leader against Chandler, and I was opposed to Chandler as a legislator.
Right.
And then the way the populist changes. In the 2 years I was in the office, the people had become more Chandlerite. And the man opposed me was on the Chandler side, and he was elected. And I, besides, I decided I didn't want to be in politics. I hold offices. Political offices. And I wanted to devote all my time to law practice.
Okay.
I wasn't unhappy being defeated.
Okay. Did you consider yourself in that late 50, early 60 period to be pretty liberal, your politics?
I guess. I don't know what, I mean, I think the definition of liberal to, and conservative means different things to different people. I mean, if being conservative is being opposed to high taxation and opposed to more intrusion of government and in our lives and all of that, then I'm conservative.
I didn't ask that question very well. Let me rephrase
okay.
it. I'm interested that you were appointed to the first Kentucky Commission on Human Rights by Governor Combs, who was pretty progressive in his own thinking about race relations
right.
in particular. And then you mentioned to me that you've been invited by people locally to go to Selma
mm-hmm.
To participate. And what I'm getting at is, were you...
I was a liberal. I guess you'd classify me as a liberal insofar as race relations
right.
are concerned.
Right, that's what I'm asking
yeah.
about. Right.
Okay. Politics generally, I guess I'm conservative.
Why do you think you were more of a liberal around race relations at that point in time? That was pretty unusual to
Well,
be.
The thing was, I never looked down my nose at a black client, a black came in. I never opposed them going to church with me. I never opposed going to school or out of school. I just I thought everybody should be treated equal. Now, I don't believe in the affirmative action, because I don't think affirmative action ought to apply to whites or blacks, either one. I think when anybody applies for a job, whoever's doing the hiring ought to be able to hire the best person, unnecessary. And I don't think black, whether what color they are, ought to have anything to do with it.
You mentioned going to church. What church did you grow up in? What denomination?
Well, that my mother was a Baptist. And my father was Cumberland Presbyterian, so I guess didn't grow up in either church. I went to both of them. I don't recall even joining one when I was a child. After I grew up and married, I became a Methodist and have been since.
Okay. I wonder, at the time that you were appointed to the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights, what did your family and your friends think about that?
I don't recall there being any conflict or anybody looking down their nose at me, certainly didn't lose any friends by being on the commission.
Okay.
No opprobrium.
I interviewed this morning a gentleman here by the name of Gladman Humbles.
Yeah.
Do you know him at all?
Well, we are acquainted, but I don't, we haven't had much contact.
Right.
Incidentally, I've admired his intellect. I think he's right, bright fellow.
Some of the stories that he's written for the paper.
Yeah, he's written.
Yeah, he's shared
good letters to the editor and things.
And he tells me he's writing. writing a book now about his mother.
About who?
His mother.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. But he told me he thought I'd like you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he asked me who else I was going to be talking to here.
I admired his intellect.
Is there anything else that I haven't asked you, Mr. Williams, about the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights or about race relations in Paducah or in Kentucky even? Frankly,
I have not, being out of politics in the sense of not seeking office, I am a registered Democrat that votes Republican when I want to, and I like the Republican better than the Democrat. But looking at Kentucky, so far as race is concerned, I know there are some counties in Kentucky that still are very much anti-black. I mean, they don't take time to blacks. But I've always thought that Paducah has been very receptive to the change, to the improvement of the status of blacks. I don't know whether, I'm sure, as far as Gladman is concerned, not quite enough receptive, but he is pushing it, and it's better than it used to be. I think he'd have to admit that.
He says that, too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for talking to me.